Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
David Eicholt, Sean Box, Swarmcast 24/7 Sports, HawkeyeInsider.com. Sean, it's been a very, very busy week, very busy day yesterday, especially with Iowa with a decisive victory over Iowa State, 75-56, even without Chris Murray, which is the craziest part about, you know, the entire thing. Iowa had some prime football visitors in as well, but let's start on the basketball side of things. You know, we'd heard rumblings about Chris Murray. You know, you and I kind of hinted that it didn't sound good in terms of him playing on Thursday. He was in a walking boot on a short turnaround, likely means he didn't practice yesterday. So for me, it was a tough sell that he was going to play. But for Iowa to go out there and do what they did to get Fran McCaffrey's 500th win, a lot to take away. Didn't allow a field goal for the first 6 minutes. Philip Obracha continues to really impress me with the strides that he's made. But Sean, where do we even start? Honestly, it was just a crazy, crazy game.
Yeah, it was in the first couple minutes, you kind of thought to yourself, okay, this makes sense a little bit, because with the way Iowa was scoring, I mean, looking back on that Duke game too, when I rewatched it, I thought to myself, okay, like these shots aren't falling. These are shots that Iowa usually hits. It's just a matter of like, they're not going in. They were good shots. I believe the shot quality during that game was really high, but they were just shots that weren't going in. And it was the same case with some of the other games that they played, like even Georgia Tech. Against Georgia Tech, they were 9 of 26 from three. And then the last couple, they were – so the last four games heading into last night, Iowa was 19 of 78 from three.
Yeah.
Which comes out to 24%. And I didn't think they were shooting bad shots. There were a couple of contested threes in previous games where I was kind of like, okay, like maybe that's not the best attempt, but yeah, I mean, just to see the shots go down, like it's crazy. I know it's a cliche and it sounds dumb and obvious, but it's amazing how different this team can play when the shots are falling, especially from three. That makes all the difference in the world. And even without Chris Murray too, that is a huge difference. And I think you have to give credit to Iowa. This was one of those games that they needed to shoot well. Because yep. I thought Iowa State's defense, I mean, I think that run at the beginning of the game kind of flustered Iowa State. And Iowa State is so limited offensively, like we saw last night. You know, they should have knocked down a couple more threes, I think. I think Gabe Kalscher is a better shooter than, you know, he showed last night. Same thing with Caleb Grill, but they're very streaky. So that's what makes them really limited offensively. And I thought Iowa had a really good game plan in place, too, to really stifle them. But yeah, I mean, you got to tip your hat to Iowa. I think if the shots were falling, this was going to be their game. But the last four games didn't really give me that vibe that was going to happen. But they proved me wrong last night and, you know, did a fantastic job offensively and knocking down shots and really spacing the floor, which led to that win.
What impressed me, you know, even in the post game, talking to Phillip and Connor, Sean, they were very open about, we were so pissed off after last year. And if you remember last year, Iowa State did not necessarily shoot well, but they crashed the offensive glass. They had like 24 offensive rebounds, second chance points, dunks. They were turning the ball over. I mean, turning Iowa over, turning it into points, like that's how they really flustered Iowa last year. And Keegan was nowhere near 100%. Now he wouldn't have been made a huge difference in the game just given the way it was going. But that's still worth noting. So Iowa stayed the heck out of that film yesterday and basically wanted to do what they did to them, except double it. And that's what Connor said. And, you know, Iowa allowed one field goal, I think, the first 6 minutes. I think Iowa stayed, what, 4 points in the first 11 minutes. But this is the stat that really opened my eyes to how good Iowa was yesterday, especially in that first half defensively. Connor talked about when I asked him about just the defense and what kind of attribute to it was, communication, et cetera. But, you know, Connor said it was imposing their will. But then he brought up this. He said there was like 4 minutes left in the first half. They had, I think he said they had 14 points, 12 or 14 points. But he said they had 6 points off turn, 6 second chance points, 6 points off turnovers of those 14. What's that tell you? Iowa State had one basket in the first 16 minutes of the game, where it was the half court offense and the ball just ended up going in the hoop on the first shot. That is an incredible defensive performance by Iowa. Look, like you said, I think Iowa State got better shots in the second half, but Iowa over, like holding them to 0 for 10, I really thought Iowa just closed out so much quicker than they had over the course of the season. And, you know, again, I'll go back to, I think Iowa really thrived off turning their defense into offense. And I think the crowd played a huge factor as well. TJ Otzelberger said postgame that his team wasn't ready for that environment. That was their first true road game of the season, not the neutral site, but just the road game. And it was a legitimate basketball crowd last night. And I know, you know, Connor got some flack, what, 2 weeks ago about the tweet that he sent out about how bad the crowd was that night against Omaha. But this is why he said something like that, because you look at what happened last night, the crowd did make an impact. And I think you could see it just in the energy that Iowa came out with right away, despite a short turnaround, despite their best player, future NBA player, Chris Murray, being injured. Like, it was a very, like, Iowa came out, they didn't just land the opening punch, Sean, they landed the opening combo. I mean, they absolutely throttled Iowa State through the first 18 minutes and never put their foot off the gas, which was just as encouraging to me.
Right. And it seemed like a complete 180 from that Duke game. I mean, Iowa came out a little bit more fired up in that Duke game, but there just seemed to be a lag. And yes, I mean, there was a little bit of a scoring drought that they have. I think they didn't score from like the 9 minute to like the 5 minute mark in the second half. And there were a couple of turnovers, and that's something that you have, that was probably one of the bad, the takeaway, or one of the poor takeaways, along with the turnovers in the second half. And
yep,
obviously Chris Murray's status, seems like the expectation is that he'll miss a couple of games, but those scoring drops, man, like they've had a couple of those throughout the season, and that those have been a little concerning, but just bringing it the whole game. And but they really put their foot on the gas in that first half. And I don't know if it was Connor McCaffrey in the starting lineup. Obviously, Phil Babracha gives them a different – yeah, I think this was a matchup that I was a little concerned about with him. I know Osinyi, I don't know how to say his name. The big man for Iowa State, the starter, he is really long, and that could give – but he's also prone to fouls. And I believe he had 4 fouls in 10 minutes of action yesterday. Yeah. And I thought Phillip did a really good job of attacking him. And so did other guys too, because I know that he can, he's capable of, you know, committing fouls and not being as disciplined. And I think Iowa did a good job of attacking that. And I think with Robert Jones, yes, he's a bigger body. Yes, you know, that might get, he had a pretty solid night, 11 points and 10 rebounds. But I thought Phillip outplayed him, and obviously outplayed the other guy too. So that was a really encouraging performance that I saw. I think Phillip, a lot of people say that matchup is going to be an issue with the size and the height and, you know, the athleticism with some of these guys and the length that he's going up against. And I think that's going to apply in a couple other games this year too. But you got to remember, he's a six-year guy, if I'm not mistaken. He's a fifth-year guy. I keep thinking he's a six-year guy.
It's so hard to keep him in track with COVID and the transfer portal and everything. It really is at this
point. KenPom lists him as a as a fifth year guy, but it also says he has two sophomore years. I think that probably applies with the COVID stuff.
Sure.
But he's a fifth year guy, and that experience is really valuable. I mean, having that extra year in the Big Ten too, I think is really, really key for him. I mean, look at these numbers. I mean, he's playing more minutes this year. His offensive rating's up. His field goal efficiency's up. His rebounding numbers are up. His block percentage is up. And he's also drawing 5.2 fouls for 40 minutes. Last year it was 2.9 fouls for 40 minutes. He's ranked higher field goal or 2-point percentage last year, but he has a higher percentage this year. And also, if he can hit three, Fran said he's not going to not let him shoot the three, but if he can hit the three, like that's a recipe for success right there. And I think he's the type of big man that would fit better with this team, with being more athletic and being more versatile than maybe some of the other guys in the past.
Pick and pop will be key for him if he can really develop that consistency. And Sean, he made 1-3 in his first 44 games. The Hawkeye went 2-for-2 from three last night. But credit to, and Phillip said too, he said, you know, there just hasn't been that many opportunities for me to shoot threes, because if he's not in the paint, probably only getting one shot. That's the reality with especially the starting lineup without Chris in there. That's going to be the reality. But I asked TJ Otzelberger about Phillip last night about how he kind of just beat Iowa State despite Iowa State throwing different guys on him. And the thing that really stuck out to me, what he said was with Phillip, it was a lot of effort-based plays that led to his increased confidence. And I thought that resonated with me, because I said, you know, you think back at some of the hard plays that he had, the emotion he had after a couple of big and ones, and you think about the course of his career, especially this season, that made a lot of sense to me. When he dives on the ground, when he gets an offensive board and a putback, like he plays better. He is more confident at that point. So I think that was huge. And something that I think is going to be an interesting storyline going into Wisconsin, it's, you know, people might kind of brush this off. I've never seen a player happier to make a three up 25 than Peyton Sanford last night.
All right, dude, shut up. I tweeted that. You can't steal my tweet.
There are three people that tweeted the same thing. Chad Lystico tweeted the same exact thing, and he actually tweeted it before you too.
No way.
Yeah. I'm gonna double check it, but I'm 90% sure he did. Kenny, I think, said something too. But aside the point, when he was high-fiving people, he missed 23 of his previous 25 shots from three, and that's something that he's never going to do in his career again. But for him to knock that down, if Chris can't go, you need Peyton Sanford to be able to stretch the floor.
Right. Oh, yeah, 100%. And seeing Connor McCaffrey hit the three too, that's a godsend for this Iowa team. That is vital. And Peyton, they need Peyton moving forward to hit shots. Because he's the type of guy that, you know, when no one else is hitting, he's the guy that you can go for shots and get looks with. And, you know, you need him as a knockdown shooter, because if he's on the floor and he's hitting and he can hit, then that just spaces up and opens up everything for the rest of your team. But when he's not, he's a good defender. He's definitely improved. I think he's still a little bit of a liability at times defensively, just because he's not as quick as some of the others. But when he's hitting shots, like, you can't take him off the floor. And that is really a valuable thing. And people found that out last night too. I know it was kind of a committee thing last night with the guys hitting threes and whatnot, but when you have one guy that can hit threes and really stroke it, then, you know, you're in good shape. And if Sanford can do that, and if he can space the floor, then he's going to play more. And that really opens things up for this Iowa team.
And again, I know Peyton hasn't shot well, but you have to give him credit. He does not lack effort out there. He's passing the ball well for the most part. He's giving effort on the glass. And he gives effort on defense. Like, he might not be a good defender, but you always take effort. If you can put effort on the floor, that still is merit in my book, and I think that's merit in Frank McCaffrey's book. But Connor McCaffrey, since January 31st, Sean, is 29 of 60 from three-point range.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You hear that? Your dog knows. Spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of pet meds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
That is great. That's, you know, that's even better than what Iowa needs. And for him to have a sense of fearlessness to be able to pull up on those, I think that's a good thing for the Iowa offense. And on top of that, there's a confidence with him about it, and he's on just a different level right now, and I think he's playing the most confident basketball of his career, and I think Iowa's gonna need him to continue doing that going forward. I thought he played outstanding last night, and three of his misses last night were in and out. I mean, there were a couple of them that I thought were about to hit the bottom of the net. They just somehow rolled out. But big win for Iowa, but this is gonna be a very big test against Wisconsin as well on Sunday, so we'll have to dive into that. But, you know, aside from the basketball point of view, Sean, you reported yesterday that Iowa was hosting linebacker Ernest Hausman on a visit. He was shadowing Jay Higgins, and not a bad day for him to be on campus. It was a good atmosphere in Carver Hawkeye. Jack Campbell winning the Buckus Award for the nation's top linebacker. This is a heavy hitter with a lot of talent, but we kind of heard whisperings about it, but it's hard to get confirmation because Ernest keeps his camp pretty quiet. But I'm very intrigued of how much traction Iowa can get with him, especially after losing Jacobs to the portal. But again, you got to tip your cap to Kirk, Tyler Barnes, and Iowa right now, because they are addressing the needs. And Ernest is going to be a big, big time player in the future.
Yeah, he would definitely be a massive, massive get. I mean, he could play multiple linebacker spots. I think he could really coexist with Jay Higgins, you know, either at inside or weak side or middle. And then obviously there's the Leo position. I'm interested to see who takes over that spot or if Iowa decides to go more cash next year. Having Hausman on campus at the, that's a big time. I'm not sure exactly what time he got there, but I mean, having the Buckus Award there is probably something that Iowa showed him. And that's a really good timing for that to be on campus. And getting him there is important because Michigan's coming in. Minnesota's involved. Ohio State sounds like they're involved. You know, there's probably going to be more SEC schools that get involved depending on how long this process goes.
Yep.
Seems like Iowa feels like it's in a good shot. Getting him on campus is huge. He grew up he was adopted, I believe, at the age of 5, and grew up in a big Nebraska family. But I remember talking to him during the recruiting process, and he would tell me that he's always been really familiar with Iowa. He really likes Iowa's system and how he could potentially fit in that system. But obviously the Nebraska ties ended up winning out. So, yeah, that's definitely going to be one to track. Be interested to see who else gets him on campus. Sounds like Minnesota's in a good place to get him on campus. But definitely a good day to have him in Iowa City if you're Iowa.
And just to kind of expand on that, Ernest is from Columbus High School, which is why I went to high school. I have family that still live in Columbus. So I kind of hear the whisperings behind the scenes. And, you know, Ernest is a guy who, as you know, Sean, he keeps everything very, very tight-lipped. He has not let a lot of information get out. He just doesn't want that spotlight. But the one thing that's been consistent with them and the consistent message I'm hearing behind the scenes, he is a big, big, big relationships person. This is not a case where he's looking to get a bunch of money from through NIL to go transfer somewhere. This is a guy that wants to play for a position coach, wants to play for a defense coordinator that he is familiar with, that he has a good relationship with. And his other top priority is to get to the NFL. So I think Iowa's going to be sitting in a good spot after this, but just people know this is not a case of NIL or anything like that. But a couple other targets were in town. And, you know, I think Cade McNamara, Eric All obviously headlined it, but Cade McNamara, I think, really, really kind of embraced being QB1 in Carver. I was there last night. People were trying to get pictures of him, talk to him. And, of course, he was a good sport about it. A lot of pictures surfaced. And with about 2 minutes left, he left the court. And he gave a double wave to the crowd and tried to pump up the crowd. And I think once fans kind of realized who that was walking toward the tunnel, because they were kind of parading him around a little bit, right? I mean, the crowd went nuts. So I think it was a very good atmosphere. If you have Eric All, if you have your future quarterback on campus, I mean, again, we'll see what happens. But I think Iowa obviously is going to be a very tough place for Eric All to turn down right now. And, you know, I don't want to say he's going to commit by the end of the weekend. He still could take a visit next week. But I think Iowa is certainly putting the full court press. And he got along well with Sam Laporta yesterday. I mean, those two were chatting and laughing all game together.
Yeah, Sam's pretty easy to get along with too. So that probably he's a really good host. I mean, he was the host for Steven Stylianos last year during his official visit. Luke Lachey is probably going to get involved a little bit too. But yeah, I mean, if you're Iowa, I think you're feeling pretty good about Eric All right now. I know there was a Cincinnati Inquirer report that stated that Notre Dame and Washington were maybe going to be potential spots, but we'll see if that happens. I'm not too optimistic that those visits happen, but we'll see.
So keep it locked in, a Hawkeye Insider for that. But Sean, I know I asked for some people to throw in some questions, and there was one consistent question I got, which you and I can kind of talk about. And it's basically, are there any players in the portal that could come back to Iowa? And I know there's some talk about Justin Jacobs coming back. I don't see a scenario where he comes back. I don't think Terry Roberts comes back. I think Terry's going to end up at Penn State. There's been some buzz about Keegan. I don't see that either, but maybe you've heard differently. Maybe you and I haven't talked behind the scenes, but are you kind of in that same camp that I am, that Iowa's, I don't want to say they've closed the door on all of the guys, but I don't think they're spending much time re-recruiting them.
Yeah, I mean, the Keegan Johnson one would make sense to try and re-recruit him, especially with Kate on board, but I'm not sure if there's going to be anything with that. Justin Jacobs would obviously make sense to try and recruit him back, but I think with Ernest Hausman coming on campus, I mean, you got to get someone on campus anyway. And pursue other guys with him gone. But I think they want to get Hausman. I mean, obviously they'd love Jacobs back, but Hausman would be a pretty big add. Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting because I think, I don't know. That's a good question. I haven't really heard too much about guys that might be coming back. I know, I mean, if you're Iowa, I'm sure you try to recruit Terry Roberts and, I mean, they have Harvard grad transfer Alex Washington coming on campus next weekend. So they're trying to fill that cornerback spot that Terry Roberts left. So they're trying to fill these spots pretty quickly. But, yeah, I'm not sure if they'll be able to get any of these guys back. Be interesting to monitor.
Like I said, maybe they hold an initial discussion or two with a couple of the guys that they kind of want to re-recruit back. But I can't see Iowa with the way the program's structured. And yeah, I know they're attacking the portal more aggressively. There's no question about that. Iowa values loyalty in a lot of ways. And I'm not saying they betrayed that loyalty. Players have a right to do whatever they want. I'm not saying that, but I'm trying to speak from a coaching staff perspective and what we've seen over the years. I just don't see a scenario that Iowa spends a lot of time re-recruiting these guys. Somebody else asked, like, can you explain the defensive guys why they would enter the portal? Is there no loyalty to Coach Parker? Is it a cash grab? I mean, maybe you're in the same boat as me, but Justin struggling with injuries, Terry maybe wanting to get closer to home. I mean, he got that Penn State offer pretty quickly, Sean. I mean, he's from Erie, Pennsylvania, and there was no lock that he was even going to start next year. I would have bet for him to start, but it was no lock that he was going to start next year. Justin Jacobs, I think, would have been the face of Iowa's defense, maybe besides Lucas Van Ness. If Lucas Van Ness decides to return, we'll get into that in a minute. But for Justin, maybe he just wants a fresh start. I mean, this is a guy that probably could get some money on the NIL scheme too. I don't think that that's out of the question, given his ceiling and his talent level. But I don't see it as a loyalty thing. I think it's a combination of closer to home, they want a fresh start, and maybe they can make some extra money through NIL, especially, you know, Justin. I think Terry would have maybe had a case, but I don't think the money is the top thing on his mind. And the reality is for Iowa, you're going to trust Phil Parker with basically whoever they throw in at any position.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't think it's too big of a concern. I mean, losing Justin, Terry sucks, but I mean, hey, you're going to have guys that are coming up and guys that are going to be ready to compete.
How much say or influence will Cade McNamara have in changing the offensive philosophy? I think that's a very interesting question because you can't give him full reign. But let's not act like Cade McNamara is only coming here to get some NIL money and to run Iowa's current offensive scheme. I mean, he's probably looking at, you know, Kirk, Brian, or anything like that and saying, hey, this is what here's what I think we should be changing. This is how we can utilize my strengths while sticking true to Iowa football. That's the way I look at it, at least.
Right. I think his Cade's interview with Kyle Allen and Jordan Palmer the other day on The Room was a really good sign of maybe what's to come. Obviously, you want to see it put to fruition, but Cade said straight up, like, Iowa's told me they're not trying to stay this way. Like, they know they need to make changes for them to be successful. And to hear that come out of his mouth and the confidence that it came out of, and I think Iowa realizes, too, that they can do some of these different things with Cade that maybe they wouldn't been able to do with Spencer or, you know, other guys coming up. I think Cade is that full package of what Iowa wants to have in the quarterback room, from a guy that can make plays on the run, you know, set his feet, make a throw. I mean, he said on the podcast too that Iowa wants to take more shots downfield. I thought that was a really interesting comment.
Yeah, I was going to say, he said air it out. And, maybe I'm overreading it. There was a sense of, like, I'm going to go show everybody what I can do. Like, there was some venom in the way he was talking when he was saying, like, please say we're going to be the worst offense in college football. Please say we're going to be bad next year. Please. Like, there's something that you can just tell. Like, there's something about it that you can see is just going to drive him. And I think when you're Iowa, when you're coming off that bad offensive season, you want your leader, you want your quarterback to kind of have that attitude, because you're going to be, you know, it seems like he's built to kind of do what he's about, you know, hoping to do. So it'll be really interesting to follow there. Another common question was about, obviously, the coaching staff, right? I mean, when are they going to make the coaching changes? Are they going to make coaching changes, et cetera? Maybe you can add something to this, Sean, but I'm only going to say what Kirk has said. He's going to evaluate everything after the bowl game. It could bite them in the butt, maybe, because coaching moves are happening. But from Kirk's standpoint, if there's no plan in place, if you're going to fire somebody just to fire somebody, what are you accomplishing? And I think people are looking at, well, Brian's going here, Copeland's going here, Barnett's going here, because obviously there's a lot of question marks about the staff, right? And my message to fans has been consistent. What do you want them to do? They are still employed. They still hold the position. They're not just going to stop doing their job because there's rumors floating around about them maybe not coming back next year. Until they are terminated or they choose to move on, they are going to continue to represent the University of Iowa and put full effort into recruiting and everything behind the scenes. Because again, what do you want them to do? So I anticipate we'll know in January if Iowa is going to make some changes.
Yep. No, I agree with you 100%. And I mean, Kirk was on the road with Brian. He was on the road with George Barnett. I believe he's probably making a couple stops with Kelvin Copeland too. So still an evaluation process. I mean, nothing's going to be decided till after the season. I know that for sure. I mean, obviously rumors are going around with, you know, offensive coordinator, and that's probably the one that might have the most, you know, to it, but who knows at this point. Maybe there won't be any changes, but we'll see.
I mean, you know, again, a lot of people are saying, is Brian going to come back? I still lean no, but it's not a done deal, in my opinion. I think that there's going to be some major evaluation. I think there's going to be some major changes either way. And I'm not saying that this has been the case, or I'm not saying it wasn't the case, but I thought this year was the put up or shut up year for Brian. And I stand by that. But if he returns next year and they do the same thing, I mean, there's nothing more you can really say. The writing is going to be on the wall at that point. And I think it's already on the wall. But we'll see what happens there. There's another. Oh, Lucas Van Ness. Lucas Van Ness is a game. Last quick question, Sean. Lucas Van Ness has been praised by McShay, Kuiper. I mean, all these NFL draft guys. I'm hearing him for a potential first-round pick. And we know that we talked to Lucas Van Ness 3 weeks ago, and he said, I haven't thought about it. I love this place. I want to come back next year. But when you hear stuff like that from Kuiper, you hear stuff like that from McShay, it's a lot of money. That's a lot of money, Sean. What are you kind of thinking about Lucas Van Ness returning next year? What's the odds on that?
I'd lean him coming back just because I think it might be a Tyler Linderbaum effect too. To the point of, I love this place. I grew up around this place. I mean, I know Lucas is, both of his parents went to Iowa State, but his family's from the state of Iowa. That was the offer that he wanted coming out of high school, was the Hawkeyes. So I think he's going to give it one more year if I had to predict right now. Just because, like I said, I feel like he's the type of Tyler Linderbaum type of kid where you're going to have to like push him to leave like they had to do with Tyler Linderbaum. Because Linderbaum wanted to come back next year. That's the word on the street, was that he wanted to come back next year. But the coaching staff was kind of like, dude, like, you know, your best option is to go to the NFL. Like, what if you get hurt like he did in the Citrus Bowl last year? What if that happens and, you know, you're going to lose millions of dollars? So,
yep.
I think Van Ness, I think this year he'll stick around. I mean, he's got a COVID year too, and I believe he has another year of eligibility after that. So I think next year is a year that he could potentially make that jump. I'm not sure if it's going to be this year yet.
I mean, TJ Hawkinson wanted to return too. And if I was Kirk Ferentz, I rip up the scholarship and say, go get money. I mean, that's the reality of the situation. But for Van Ness, this is a guy, Sean, that could mid first round, he could slip to second, third. Just it all depends on the testing and what NFL teams see him. There's no character issues or anything like that. But like NFL teams are so weird about it. But I looked this up this morning when I saw this question. If Van Ness comes back next year and has an All-American caliber year, which I would vote in preseason All-American next season, I think if he comes back, he's going to be an absolute unit on the edge. It's from the end of the first round, early second round, to a top 15, top 10 pick, Sean, that's about $15 million more. So it's a chance, but that's a whole lot of money on the front end of your career. If you get a top 10 or top 15 evaluation rather than a round two evaluation. So if I'm Lucas Van Ness, and he's still very raw on the defensive line, like that's what people, like, I think he realizes that too. NFL teams know that it's all off potential. But if Van Ness wants to go to the NFL, make more of a year one impact whenever he goes to the league, I think it is his best bet in terms of from a production in the NFL standpoint to come back for one more season. And if he balls out, goes top 15, top 10. You can afford a nice little beach house somewhere with that extra signing bonus, right? So I kind of lean that way too. But no, Sean, it's going to be very interesting to follow Iowa. I mean, this week has been absolutely bonkers. I know you can attest to that too. I mean, this has been one of the crazier weeks, I think, on the beat, just with the portal opening and what Iowa's trying to do. But, you know, Hawkeye Insider, 50% off. Annual subscription. Be sure to check that out. Be sure to follow Sean and I on Twitter at David Eichel, at SBOC247, at Hawkeyes on 247. And we'll be sure to keep you updated on everything that's going on, because with a bowl game, with basketball, with signing day coming up in under 2 weeks, content. So be sure to stay tuned for that. And we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.